Last week, we began looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, and we learned that Ecclesiastes is the record of one man's search for meaning and happiness. That man was King Solomon. Solomon had the perfect resume to research the matter of happiness and purpose. He was by far the wealthiest person in the world. He was by far the wisest, and he had all the time he wanted so that he could fully give himself to this research. He was also very powerful. He did not have some regulatory agency looking over his shoulder as he conducted his research. We also learned that there were terms he used that are important to understanding the text. One of those terms is vanity. Vanity does not mean bragging or being vain about one's looks. Rather, vanity means emptiness or useless. He also uses the phrase under the sun or life under the sun. The context of this means that he conducted his research as if there were no God. And that's important to understand because when most people go looking for happiness and purpose, they don't always include God, at least not at the beginning. Solomon's search for happiness and meaning began with wisdom. And this is the report that he files at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to the study and explored by wisdom all that is done under the sun. What a heavy burden God laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. So Solomon starts looking for happiness and purpose in his life through what we would call education. And he discovered that education is not the ultimate answer. In fact, at verse 15, he says this, "What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted." In other words, humans cannot solve all the problems of the world. And in fact, humans cannot possibly understand all the things about the world. There's a story of a young lady whose name is Karen Chang from Fremont, California. She achieved a perfect score on both sections of the SAT and also a perfect 8,000 score on the very tough University of California Acceptance Index. Nobody in history has ever been able to do that. Karen was a straight-A student at San Jose Mission High School. She claims to be a typical teenager. She munches on junk food and talks for hours on the phone with her friends, and she claims to be a procrastinator and never does her homework until the last minute. Karen's teachers, however, tell a different story. They call her Wonder Woman. She has an unquenchable thirst for knowledge, and she also has an uncanny ability to retain everything she hears and reads. The national news story about Karen drew a lot of attention, and one of the reporters asked her, "You're a bright girl. What is the meaning of life?" And Karen Chang replied, "I have no idea. I would like to know that myself." Here she was, brilliantly smart, but she did not understand the meaning of life. T.S. Eliot said it this way, "All of our knowledge only brings us closer to our ignorance." Now, listen to Solomon's conclusion in his search for happiness through wisdom, education, and knowledge at verse 18, where he says, "For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief." If education could bring meaning and happiness to people's lives, then the happiest people in the world would be PhDs. And I have known just enough of them to say that that is not the case at all. So Solomon continues on his search for happiness and meaning in life through wild living. And at Ecclesiastes 2, verses 1 through 3, he files this report. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and remember embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the sun during the few days of their lives. So at first he tries to find happiness and satisfaction through education and knowledge and wisdom. And he said that was like grasping at the wind. Then he turns to find happiness and meaning through amusement and laughter and pleasure. And he found that this did not bring lasting happiness either. Solomon found that laughter was only breaks up the monotony of crying, and pleasure is just simply an intermission to pain. And of the 3,000 Proverbs that he wrote, in the book of Proverbs, at chapter 14, verse 3, he says this, even in laughter the heart may sorrow, and the end of joy is grief. The palace at this time during this phase of his quest for lasting happiness was like a Las Vegas casino. So he had tried amusement, and that didn't work. So next, he tries alcohol, and that is what he's saying at verse 3. I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. Now what this says is that Solomon was not necessarily a drunk or an alcoholic. In fact, he wanted to keep his wits about him so he could record his observations about the effect of wine. And wine was a very good way of loosening up so that he could enjoy conversation with people. But it brought no sense of lasting happiness. When the party was over, the lights went out, and no real gains had been made. It was only a temporary distraction. Now, having a temporary distraction can be a good thing for us. I mean, but as a way of life, it only brings emptiness. And our economy is driven by trying to sell us temporary distraction. You see, friends, the real purpose of temporary distractions is so that we can recharge our batteries so we can go back and face the chores of everyday living. So that gives Solomon an idea. Maybe happiness and purpose can be found through work and projects. And in Ecclesiastes 2, verses 4 through 6, Solomon files this report. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. Now, if you'll notice, Solomon uses the phrase I 4 times in 2 verses. I did these things for me. But here's the irony. Those building projects ended up serving the needs and interest of other people. The projects and work, if that is the end goal in itself, we will not find lasting happiness and we will be left empty. Because you see, the human soul is built in such a way that we have this deep, intense longing that cannot be satisfied unless the work we do is linked to the glory of God rather than to the glory of ourselves. Now, as a result of all these projects, Solomon spent a lot of money, but his return on investment was phenomenal. So that gives him another idea. Maybe wealth is the way to find happiness and meaning in life. And so he files this report at chapter 2, verses 7 through 11. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born into my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers, and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. It was a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Now, it's difficult to express how wealthy King Solomon really was. But in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 10, verse 14, it tells us that the weight of gold that came into Solomon's house each year amounted to 666 talents of gold. Now, gold historians and some scholars estimate that 666 talents of gold translates into $250 million per year. That's like winning the Powerball jackpot every year for the rest of your life. Now, the late great philosopher of late night television, Johnny Carson, once said, "The only value of money is so you don't have to worry about being poor." So let's pause and recap quickly what Solomon has said in his report. He said he sought meaning and happiness through wisdom and education. He sought it through wild living and pleasure and wine. He sought it through work and projects. And he sought it through wealth and gold. And he found that none of these things brought a lasting happiness to him. Now, as we come to verse 11, Solomon gives his evaluation of life under the sun. And I would like to recap those things. He makes three evaluations of his experiment. At verse 11, which I just read, he tells us that man's work ultimately does not satisfy him. Then at verses 13 through 16, he says this. He makes this observation. "I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die." He discovers that being wise did not separate him from the final ending, which is death. And then at verse 18 through 22, he says this, "I hated all the things I toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun?" And this one is simply saying, a man's work does not succeed him. That when a person dies, everything they have goes to someone else. Now, here's the point that I want to drive at this morning. Solomon has discovered that life under the sun, in other words, life without God, does not satisfy you. It does not separate you from death. And when you die, someone else gets it all. And even as believers, we can get caught up in this trap of living life under the sun. You see, unless our life includes those things which are over the sun, which means God, then we're not going to find lasting happiness and meaning. And that's why the Apostle Paul tells the Colossian church, "Set your affections on things that are above and not on that which is below." Don't live life with God off in a corner, but live life with God in the very center of all that you do. And that's the conclusion that Solomon came to at the end of his report at verses 24 and 25. "A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and to find satisfaction in their own toil. This, too, I see is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment?" So I want to close with a question. As forgiven sinners who often live life under the sun, we all seem to have something that we use to help us get by. It might be some little addiction. It might be tobacco or alcohol. Perhaps it's coffee. I saw a t-shirt one time that said, "I drink coffee for your protection." Obviously, the person wearing that t-shirt didn't think they could handle other people or life in general unless they were fully caffeinated. Or maybe you're a control freak or a workaholic. Maybe you use food to try to medicate your bad feelings. All of these things are a form of addiction. And all addictions share a common characteristic. which is called tolerance. And in tolerance, the longer you use something, the less effective it becomes. So you have to use more. And then that becomes ineffective, so you use even more. And you get into this endless trap of more, more, more. But friends, the longer you know and experience Jesus, the sweeter it becomes. A very wise man by the name of Blaise Pascal, who was a French mathematician, philosopher, and theologian, said it this way: "In every human heart, there is a God-shaped hole that only Jesus Christ can fill." Now, last week, I asked you to look at the condition of your spiritual connection to God. This week, I want you to take a look into that God-shaped hole that's in your life. I want you to examine what you're trying to fill it up with. In other words, what are you using to try to get by every day, or that you think helps you get by every day? And Solomon, at verse 26, says this: "To the person who pleases God, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God." And what is it that pleases God? Well, I'll refer back to Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 14. "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you have a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all of these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." So friends, as you look into that God-shaped hole this week, and you discover the things that you're using to try to fill it up, you might discover that those things are pleasing to you, and those things only bring temporary distraction and happiness. The things that bring lasting happiness, the things that will fill up that God-shaped hole, is when we do things that pleases God, like being compassionate, kind, humble, gentle, and patient, and forgiving. That's what that God-shaped hole needs to be filled with. So this week, I would like you to take a look at the inside that God-shaped hole and find the things that you've been trying to fill it with. And if it's not pleasing to God, throw it out. And if it is pleasing to God, keep it there and it will grow. Amen.